And now our cover story this morning. Several weeks ago, longtime Adamus director Precious Doobie announced that she would be leaving that position. And so obviously, well, I guess in March, right? March, we're going to have a change of leadership coming to the Hancock County Board of Alcohol, Drug Abuse, and Mental Health Services. Under Precious' leadership, there has been a dramatic expansion of services with respect to both addiction and mental health services in the community. And Precious, thanks very much for dropping by. First of all, we appreciate it.
Thank you.
It is quite a legacy. Talk about what is the biggest difference now versus when you first started with respect to these services within the community?
Well, you know, Chris, I go back quite a ways, and there was landmark legislation in Ohio in 1988, mm-hmm. which really called for the deinstitutionalization from state hospitals. Mm-hmm. And so all around the state of Ohio, the only thing in community mental health was outpatient counseling and being able to see a doctor. Mm-hmm. So when I started in 1990, mm-hmm. that's all we had.
Yeah.
And my role was to build and develop the services and supports people would need to live successfully outside of an institution. Things like case management and housing and recovery supports and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so the first 20 years of my career was building out all of those services for people that struggle with mental illness. Mm-hmm. And then it flipped in 2013 when we had something very similar for people with addiction, where we had outpatient counseling and AA, basically. Mm-hmm. And we built out a system for addiction.
Yeah. When that first transition happened, you go all the way back again to late 80s, early 90s, there was still very much the mindset, and to a certain extent there is even today, but much less so now, I would imagine, than then, that mindset that those with mental illness were maybe not able to be productive members of society. And was that the biggest challenge to overcome, is that mindset of what those with mental illness,
there was tremendous fear
individuals
were going to come out of the institution, mm-hmm. come into our communities and wreak havoc.
Yeah.
And there would be problems. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, the approach that was taken was to make sure when people came back, there were supports for them. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that you have to keep in mind is during this period, there was a whole advent of new psychotropic drugs that didn't exist. You know, in the olden days, it was Thorazine.
Yeah.
You know, and so all of the changes in the research and the development of new treatments and new pharmacological interventions really helped as well.
Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, you kind of go through that same thing in the early 2010s, early to mid 2010s, so the past decade or so, with attitudes toward addiction. Did you get the feeling that it was like deja vu all over again?
Oh, absolutely. And so unfortunate that it had taken so long to build up the services for mental health that we were really behind, mm-hmm. you know. And so when the epidemic hit here, mm-hmm. I mean, we really had to pedal very fast to try and catch up and do building very quickly to try and meet the needs.
One of the things that we know is that oftentimes these two things, mental health and addiction, are intersecting issues.
Yes.
Does that make it easier or more challenging to provide the services that these individuals need within the community?
Well, I think one of the things that we have to do is really appreciate the people that deliver services, mm-hmm. because the skill level that they have to be able to discern, mm-hmm. you know, what needs to be addressed first.
Yeah.
How it needs to be addressed. Mm-hmm. When is it co-occurring? When is it not?
Yeah.
You know, the complexity of issues has continued to increase. And so the talent that we have to secure in our system is just, you know, amazing.
Because I remember reading, and I think we talked about this in years past, the challenge being that so many treatment, addiction treatment programs are not set up to deal with those with mental health issues, and so many mental health programs are not necessarily equipped to deal with individuals with addiction. And when you have those things intersect, you know, obviously you have to bridge that some at some point or some way.
I think there's been tremendous growth in that area, and people understanding that you cannot just segregate and say, look, you know, we're going to isolate and only deal with mental health and isolate and only deal with addiction. The lines are too blurry. Mm-hmm. And so I think what's really helped to bring those two systems together has been the understanding of the impact of trauma and what that's had on individuals. And that learning and that growth across our country started in the mid-teens and has really advanced our field.
And I was going to say, you know, providing the resources for those in the community who are struggling with this issue, these issues, that's one thing and certainly very important, but equally important is recognizing the need and the understanding within the community for those who aren't dealing with these issues, that their neighbors and their loved ones and their coworkers, in some cases, many cases, are.
Right. Everyone needs to be eyes and ears in the community to help look out for one another and offer and suggest maybe you need to see someone and learn how to approach those kind of conversations.
And understanding what these issues are and what they are not.
Correct. We're not asking the general public to be diagnosticians, but you can tell if somebody looks withdrawn, somebody looks sad or is acting erratically enough to say, approach someone and say, are you doing okay? Are you doing okay? Is there something I can do to help?
That actually kind of leads to one of the other things that I wanted to mention, because we talk about awareness and understanding within the community. Certainly in the news this week has been the story of the tragic and shocking death of Rob Reiner, apparently at the hands of his son, who has very famously dealt with addiction through much of his life. We don't know really many of the details here, and there's a lot more that will come out as this case progresses in the weeks and months to come. But when you hear that story, when you heard that story, what's the first thing that goes through your mind as somebody who deals with these issues on a regular basis and the families that deal with these issues on a regular basis?
Well, I would say two things. One is just a reminder that mental illness and addiction are life and death issues like any other disease. Mm-hmm. And we need to keep that in mind, that you know, intervention and treatment works, but we need to get people there.
And that's part of the thing that one of the things that jumped into my mind was, you know, the understanding there, but for the grace of God go I. We don't have this in our family, but for those families who do deal with this, is this the kind of cloud that hangs over their head?
You know, the disease of addiction, depending on the severity, the length of involvement, and so on, you know, it's filled with deceit. You know, because you don't want to tell the truth about what you're involved in. So, you know, so there's these lies and deceit. And so when you're a family member and interacting with a family member, there's always this what's true, what's not true, what's happening. And always this questioning of can I trust what's happening?
Yeah.
And so even when individuals get into recovery, there is a significant amount of repair that needs to be done in relationships across families, between siblings, between parents, and so on and so forth, because they have to work through all of, you know, that what's been true, what's not true, and how do I trust you today?
Yeah. Really tough. So you are on the job through March when you will be retiring. What are, let me ask it this way, what are your goals for these final couple, 3 months that you are wrapping up your tenure? And what are your goals looking forward? Where do we need to go from here within the community?
Well, my biggest goal over my remaining time is to express my gratitude to everyone who has stepped up, including yourself and the media, to really help create that awareness and understanding, to make sure that I've identified the next steps for mm-hmm. whoever follows me, mm-hmm. and wish them well. I think we have a tremendous foundation from which to build, and I wish whoever follows me nothing but success.
Again, Precious Doobie is longtime director of the Hancock County Board of Alcohol, Drug Abuse, and Mental Health Services. This hasn't, it has not been without its challenges, the times. I mean, and I know we've talked about many of those before, but we are certainly in a much better position community-wise with respect to addiction and mental health resources in Findlay and Hancock County than we were when you first stepped into the role. And thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for all the times you've had me on, Chris.